Bonjour, and welcome to Bon Appetit on Sun Sounds of Arizona. This is your volunteer broadcaster, Ellen Ward. Today I'll continue with 55 Reasons to Love Thanksgiving, a very Bon Appetit celebration of the best day of the year. The first 35 reasons can be found on the on-demand schedule at sunsoundsofarizona.org. Look for Thanksgiving 2024, Episode 1. 36. There are enough people in the house to play games. It's rare to have your funny cousins, your competitive in-laws, and your closest friends under one roof, and a game is the way to make the most of it. Some of the most memorable Thanksgiving moments happen during a post-dinner round of fishbowl or balderdash. If you're interested in adding something new to your annual rotation, here are a few that will give everybody something to talk about on the ride home. Wilder Davies. Use and clues. If you think a game where the goal is to guess colors based on cues sounds easy to play, it's because it is. Mix it up with some house rules, like making people use facial expressions and abstract sounds as cues. The game of things. Players write answers to prompts like things you should never say to a boss, and then guess who wrote what. You quickly learn a lot about each player's unique sense of humor, and if you're strategic, how to mimic it. Le Puzzle Puzzle. When a game is too much, the zany contemporary puzzles from Le Puzzle are what you want to work on between rounds of dishes, eating your umpteenth slice of pie, and catching up with folks you haven't seen in a while. Really loud librarians. If you took Scattergories, made it into a team game, and added a dose of screaming, you'd have really loud librarians. It's competitive and silly. Plus, it's one of the few instances where shouting on Thanksgiving is actually encouraged. 37. If you are too full for pie, you can always have it for breakfast tomorrow. I was raised in a pretty health-conscious household, but the morning after Thanksgiving meant one thing: breakfast pie. This was allowed on a series of technicalities. Pumpkin is a vegetable, pecans have protein, apples are good for you. But really, I think my mom just wanted a slice of pie before noon as much as we did. Emil Stanek. 38. Turkey wings are almost always on sale the week after Thanksgiving. 39. A digestif is never more necessary. The tryptophan is making you sluggish, your eyes heavy with satisfaction. You can't fathom another bite. But how about another sip? A pour of something special is just the ticket, inviting conviviality and extending that post-prandial glow just a little bit longer. From classic Italian Amari to a new school coffee liqueur, these are the bottles our staffers reach for to signal the end of the meal. Joseph Hernandez. Faccia brutto senterbe. At the end of a feast, my body cries out for a digestif. Holidays call for something special, like this brat green spirit. It's so herbaceous, it's almost like having an after-dinner salad. Karina Finn. J. Rieker & Company, Café Amaro. I'm not really a dessert person, so instead, I'll pour myself a nip of this aromatic liqueur, made in Kansas City with locally roasted single-origin coffee. It's a touch sweet, but bitter enough to feel like it's actually aiding digestion. Emily Ferris. Amaro Averna. When my dad would take me out to dinner in college, we would always stop somewhere for an Amaro after. It felt special, adult, even a little European. My go-to now is Averna, with its subtle touch of citrus. Mallory Santucci. Fourth Ave Black Nocino. This Brooklyn-based distiller's walnut liqueur is made with locally foraged black walnuts and gently sweetened with wildflower honey from upstate New York. The candied nut and warm baking spice flavors really encourage lingering around the table. Allie Inglese. 40. Because your cousin brought gummies. 41. Because a sliver is a subjective unit of measurement. 42. Because you don't have to wait until tomorrow to make a turkey sandwich. 43. Because playing with dripping candle wax never gets old. 44. because it's the only acceptable time to watch a Charlie Brown Thanksgiving. 45, because the Charlie Brown Thanksgiving is only 25 minutes long. 46, because of how funny people look when they fall asleep on the couch. 47, when else are you going on a family walk? I grew up in a watch football on the couch family, but I married into a long walk in the woods family, and I have to say, this is a case where my in-laws are absolutely correct. Because I'm the kind of person who likes to have at least one piece of every single Thanksgiving dessert on offer, a sunset walk between dinner and the main event, pie, has become my favorite holiday tradition. Corina Finn. 48. Dishes always turn into a dance party. Two words, disco dishes. At my family's Thanksgiving, the dishes are always a ton of fun. Maybe because we're a few bottles of red deep by that point. As soon as dinner is over, we tell Alexa to blast Donna Summer, and pretty soon my aunts and cousins and I are scrubbing and singing along. It goes quickly when we're working together, and the sooner we're done, the sooner we get to dessert. My favorite part, Ellie and Glees. 49. Holiday cookie season starts right now. 50. The leftovers don't have to taste anything like Thanksgiving. 51. Because any unfortunately dry breast meat can just go right into the stock pot. 52. Because there's still so much long weekend left. 53. Because you are not obliged to do anything with the rest of the long weekend. 54. Because you can finally start putting up the string lights. 55. Even if everything doesn't go exactly as planned, there's always next year. Next, I'll read a recipe for garlic bread biscuits, 8 to 12 servings. These are the biscuits you make when you want to win Thanksgiving. This glorious mashup brings garlic bread intensity to a buttermilk biscuit package, avoiding the harrowing wait times associated with yeasted dough, and they bake up dramatically flaky. Cut them smaller than you'd expect for biscuits. They're all too easy to return to for seconds and thirds. A metal bench scraper is invaluable here in helping you cut and shape the dough. You'll need 7 cups, 875 grams all-purpose flour, 1/4 cup sugar, 2 tablespoons plus 2 teaspoons baking powder, 1 tablespoon plus 1 teaspoon garlic powder, 1 teaspoon baking soda, 2 ounces Parmesan, finely grated, about 1 cup, plus more for serving, 1/2 cup packed, plus 3 tablespoons finely chopped parsley, 2 tablespoons diamond crystal, or 1 tablespoon plus 1/2 teaspoon Morton kosher salt, plus more, 2 cups, 4 sticks, chilled unsalted butter, thinly sliced, plus 4 tablespoons, 1/2 stick, left whole, 2 1/2 cups buttermilk, 4 garlic cloves, finely grated. Whisk flour, sugar, baking powder, garlic powder, baking soda, 2 ounces Parmesan, 1/2 cup parsley, 2 tablespoons diamond crystal, or 1 tablespoon plus 1/2 teaspoon Morton kosher salt in a large bowl to combine. Add sliced 2 cups, 4 sticks, butter, toss to coat, then smash into smaller, flatter pieces, about the size of a dime, with your hands. Chill at least 15 minutes, or cover and chill up to 12 hours. Drizzle buttermilk over butter mixture, toss with a fork to incorporate, then knead lightly in bowl until a shaggy dough forms. It will look dry. Turn dough out onto a surface, pat into a 1-inch square, gently pushing dry bits into dough as best as possible. Roll slightly to flatten to about 1/2 inch thick. Using a bench scraper, cut dough into 3 equal pieces. Stack pieces on top of one another, sandwiching any loose dry bits of dough between layers. Press down with your hands to flatten and pat into a rectangle. Tidy edges with bench scraper. Roll dough into a 1-inch thick rectangle. If dough is sticking to rolling pin, scrape off with bench scraper and press back into larger block. Repeat cutting, stacking, and rolling process 2 more times. Dough will look less dry as you move to the final stage. Making sure final rectangle is 1 to 1.25 inches thick. Wrap tightly in plastic and chill at least 1 hour and up to 12 hours. Place a rack in middle of oven. Preheat to 425 degrees. Unwrap dough and trim 1/8 inch off sides with a knife to tidy edges. This will also help biscuits rise later in the oven. Cut dough into 4 equal rectangles, then cut each rectangle into 6 squares to make 24 biscuits total. Arrange on a parchment-lined baking sheet, spacing about 1/4 inch apart. Chill 30 minutes, then bake until tops are golden brown, 35 to 40 minutes. Just before the biscuits are finished baking, heat garlic, a large pinch of salt, and remaining 4 tablespoons, 1/2 stick, butter, in a small saucepan over medium until butter is melted. Remove from heat and stir in remaining 3 tablespoons parsley. Remove biscuits from oven. Brush garlic butter over. Sprinkle lightly with Parmesan. Now I'll be reading A Season for Community Building, story by Marissa Conrad. On the morning of November 25th, 2021, Leah Kamova toasted 2 crumpets, brewed a mug of coffee, and sat down in the kitchen of the home she shared with her boyfriend in St. Louis. "I remember waking up and being in a somewhat okay mood," she says, "but as I was eating breakfast, a wave of sadness hit me. I was sitting there by myself on Thanksgiving morning, which I don't think I've ever done in my life." Kaimova's boyfriend, a musician, was on tour. Her family was in Atlanta, where she grew up. Her friends were scattered. After getting her master's in music from the University of Southern California, Kaimova moved to the Midwest. "In St. Louis, I now have maybe 2 solid friends and family who I see pretty frequently," she says. Her then boyfriend, now her husband, is often touring. "I'm physically alone a lot of the time," she says. "When he's home, I have one life. When he's gone, I have another. And sometimes it's hard to bring them together." She pauses. "I still struggle with trying to figure out if I'm feeling lonely or not." An epidemic of loneliness. There is surprisingly little quantitative data on who feels lonely during the holidays and what that loneliness means. Much of it, confoundingly, comes from a personal finance company, which for several years commissioned a survey of Americans 18 and over on the topic. In 2021, 55% reported experiencing loneliness during the holidays. In 2017, when the AARP Foundation asked the same age group to reflect on the previous 5 holiday seasons, 31% said they had felt lonely sometime. But these numbers lack context. How many of these people were also lonely in October or January or July? We know that people who feel isolated and lonely around the holidays don't feel that way only around the holidays, says Jennifer Raymond, Chief Strategy Officer at AgeSpan, a nonprofit that works to build social connection and food security among residents of northeastern Massachusetts. Maybe someone is feeling lonely in November or December because they've lost a loved one or they have some struggles with their family members, says Jillian Rakusen-Kornmeyer, Executive Director of the Foundation for Social Connection, a Washington, D.C. nonprofit. Grief or family conflict don't necessarily stop when the holidays end. Neither does the sense that some form of social connection is missing from our days. In this regard, the data is more comprehensive. The American Time Use Survey, published each year by the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, BLS, presents a detailed account of how people 15 and older spend their days. In 2003, the first year BLS asked Americans to keep time use diaries, people spent an average of 4 hours 47 minutes a day alone. But in 2023, people spent an average of nearly 7 hours a day alone and just about 4 hours a week socializing. Isolation is not the same as loneliness, which exists in the space between the social connection a person wants and the social connection they have. A person who spends much of their time alone might do so happily. Conversely, it's possible to feel lonely when surrounded by people. But as social isolation has risen, loneliness has too. A recent study found that people who spent more than 75% of their waking hours alone reported the greatest loneliness. Nearly 1 in 3 American adults reports feeling lonely at least once a week, according to the American Psychiatric Association. 1 in 10 say they are lonely every day. Worse, both are linked to the risk of premature death. Lack of social connection can be as dangerous as smoking up to 15 cigarettes a day. Loneliness and social isolation, U.S. Surgeon General Vivek H. Murthy, M.D., declared last year, have become an epidemic. It's important to consider the bigger picture around loneliness because it affects how we think about solutions. Advice columns often suggest a day of volunteer work or cooking or baking something special as a fix for the holiday blues. This leaves chronic loneliness out of the conversation. Volunteering is wonderful, but in one landmark study, it alleviated loneliness only for those who logged more than 100 hours a year. These kinds of suggestions also place the burden of solution on the individual, when many times we should be thinking more systematically. What if we use this season as an opening to talk about our year-round struggles with loneliness and isolation? And what if the movement towards social connection was rooted in societal change, something much bigger than phoning a friend or taking a self-care day? Rakusen Kornmeyer calls this thinking upstream. To improve social connection across the country, she says, we need to start considering solutions on a larger scale. There is no one answer to loneliness, but by examining what's working in some communities, we can draft a picture of how that work might be replicated or adapted for others. Transforming a park. When city staff in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, set out to build a network of community gardens in public parks, the impetus was to increase healthy food access, with the added benefit of fostering community cohesion through social space. Concept plans for the new gardens include shared picnic areas and shade structures, along with a prioritized focus on accessibility guided by the Americans with Disabilities Act. This alone can help neighbors connect. By providing space to interact, community gardens broaden and strengthen social networks, studies found. But there was another crucial element to the Cedar Rapids initiative, involving residents in the planning process. A survey open to all city residents, offered in 5 languages, asked for input on garden design and programming. A steering committee included local gardeners and representatives from local food-focused nonprofits, many operating and maintaining gardens. Emma Avery and Leah Carlberg, urban planners based in Vancouver, used the term placemaking to describe community efforts to improve a place, such as transforming public spaces into social hubs. Placemaking is the process of bringing spaces to life, Avery says. Through collaboration, residents gain a sense of belonging and ownership, which can foster social connection. Carlberg and Avery work at Happy Cities, an urban planning firm focused on how to design communities to boost well-being and social connection. In 2023, the Canada Healthy Communities Initiative partnered with Happy Cities to interview more than 100 people who had participated in a placemaking effort in their community. The resulting report, titled The Power of Placemaking, looked at the benefits and challenges of these efforts. 72% of respondents reported that they had created more social connections, and 69% said these efforts fostered a greater sense of meaning and belonging. Placemaking poses unique challenges in urban and rural areas alike. as government presence, funding, infrastructure, and demographics vary between communities. Avery and Carlberg hope that more towns and cities recognize the importance of funding placemaking, both through supporting local organizations and creating more shared spaces that function year-round. Some examples include building community structures and parks that incorporate garage door style windows that fully enclose the space in case of rain or cold, or altering policies to allow safe, controlled outdoor fire pits in appropriate situations. Those can be huge assets if we're thinking about placemaking in the wintertime to combat social isolation in colder months, Carlberg says. Addressing food insecurity. Food insecure adults are more likely to experience loneliness than those who have regular access to meals. People connect over food, says Raymond of AgeSpan. The Reunir restaurant program, launched by AgeSpan in 2022, aims to address social connection and food access by offering twice monthly restaurant vouchers to adults who report experiencing food insecurity, social isolation, or both in Northeast Massachusetts. They get to order whatever they want from the menu, says Raymond. They get to make requests like, this salad, hold the tomatoes, dressing on the side, or this, well done. They get the dignity of the food experience. She compares this to meal delivery programs where menus are often fixed or have limited options. Since Reunir began, the program has enrolled more than 500 participants who have logged more than 2,500 meals. In follow-up surveys, 70% of participants report improved social isolation scores, measured by how much they agree with statements including, I feel completely alone and no one really knows me well. 64% of participants say they usually dine with friends, though it might not matter. Studies show there is a strong benefit to the weaker types of social interactions that come with eating out, including interacting with restaurant staff. One reason for the program's success, Raymond says, is the choice to work with small family-owned restaurants where Reunir diners can feel that sense of community. Our staff has received telephone calls from a restaurant saying, you know, Maria used to come here, and she hasn't come in a couple of weeks. We just want to make sure everything's okay. Since the population served by Reunir is predominantly Latino and Southeast Asian, menus are available in Spanish, Vietnamese, and Thai, and restaurants offer dishes from a range of cultures. A meal out may take on added meaning in November and December, but year-round efforts make the real difference when the holidays arrive. Marco Agustina, an economist in New Mexico who studies community and well-being, cites a scene from the movie Trolls World Tour, which they recently saw with their kids. Barb, a villainous but lonely troll, receives a glitter-filled invitation from a relentlessly positive troll named Poppy, who suggests the two can be fast friends. Barb's line is something like, doesn't she know it takes years of mutual care and respect to develop a true friendship? Christina says, or put another way, it's the regularity of experience that helps people feel less alone. Marissa Conrad, a writer based in New York, studies public health and patient care in the Narrative Medicine Program at Columbia University. The last article I'll be reading today is All Sorted. Entrepreneur and Kitchen Glow Up host Ellen Marie Bennett shares how a few upgrades and chef-inspired hacks can instantly transform your home, by Karina Finn. Ellen Marie Bennett was a 24-year-old line cook when she decided that she was tired of wearing cheaply made, uninspired, restaurant-issue aprons in the kitchen. Instead of accepting them as status quo, she launched her own line, Headley & Bennett, on a whim. 12 years later, she's expanded the beloved brand to include colorful, highly functional knives, a BA editor favorite, kitchen linens, and even limited edition chef-approved clocks. Bennett is continuing her quest to bring professional-level gear to home cooks everywhere with her new taste-made show, Kitchen Glow Up. But you don't need a demo crew to alter your own space. As Bennett says, anybody can cook anywhere. A handful of organizing tricks and worthwhile investments can make a world of difference. Whether you are working with a tiny rental or looking to make a couple of smart adjustments to your already awesome forever home, these are the four things Bennett recommends for a mini makeover so you can cook and host during the holidays like a pro. Lena and Luca Liquid Chalk Markers, $10, Amazon.com. Labeling and dating containers with painter's tape and Sharpies are how chefs keep their walk-in fridges from turning into expired ingredient graveyards. At home, Bennett loves to use erasable white chalk markers. They're compatible with most surfaces, including glass and plastic. You can write directly on jars, food containers, or even the produce drawers of your fridge so you know exactly what's inside. Top-notch knives. Chef's knife set from $195, HedleyandBennett.com. A cheap knife set might seem like a good value, but it can clutter up your kitchen fast. You don't need a knife block with 800 knives, Bennett says. Instead, she recommends paring down your collection to three quality must-haves: a chef's knife, a serrated knife, and a 5.5-inch utility knife. This mighty trio can handle just about any kitchen task. Plus, they come in sleek shades like enoki white, caviar black, and shiso green. A hands-free helper. Step 2 foot pedal faucet adapter system from $675, principalfaucets.com. One thing we did in almost every house on Kitchen Glow Up was install these pedals to turn your sink faucet on and off, Bennett says. This sleek system from Principal Faucets is Bennett's pick, but there are plenty of options on the market as low as $30 and simple enough to hook up with a home toolkit. It's as close the mother of two will get to feeling like she has an extra pair of hands, the ultimate kitchen upgrade. The Timeless Tool, 7-inch Chico Mocajete, $65, Masienda.com. You may have spied these traditional mortars and pestles at Mexican restaurants. The ancient tool is a must in Bennett's kitchen. A high-quality mocajete, like this one, made from volcanic rock from Masienda, is kind of like the OG food processor, Bennett says. She uses hers to grind up garlic and fresh spices, or to prepare classics like salsa and guacamole. Plus, once you're done smashing avocados, you can use it as a stylish serving dish. Thanks so much for listening to episode 2 of Thanksgiving, November 2024, on Bon Appetit. Saying au revoir for now, this is your Sun Sounds volunteer reader, Ellen Ward.